every once in a while, we have to bring out the big dog.
Meow.
Oh, God help us. It's time for Danny Unleashed. Sponsored by Easton Roofing, where integrity matters. Go to eastonroofing.com for more.
Are you saying you can't hear Danny? What do you want?
Curtis will fix it.
More?
I want more.
Is that
more? Give me more Van Halen.
Is that more? I don't know.
That's good enough.
It's good enough?
That's fine.
Let's just talk, Danny.
That's fine.
Can you hear that?
I can hear you fine, yes.
That's all you need to hear is me, buddy. Danny Klinkscale is here. He's unleashed right now.
I am. You know, you guys were concluding the hour by talking about coffee. I have never had a sip
ever
of coffee in my life.
Not surprising.
When I was a little boy of maybe six or so, I was settling down to eat my Cheerios. And I sat down, and there was no spoon around, but my mom's spoon was sitting there, and she had just completed drinking her coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And her coffee spoon, I picked up and took a bite of my Cheerios, and I said, ah!
So never again.
And then, you know, I tried coffee ice cream, and I didn't like that flavor profile. So I'm just like, I don't think
it's not for me.
It's not for me. And I'm kind of glad I never started, because I am a person who tends to do things over and over again if I do like them, like run and all kinds of other things, exercise, etc. I think if I started, you know, drinking coffee, I might have been a 7-cup-a-day man.
Could have been.
I have to put so much stuff in coffee. It really isn't coffee anymore. I just call it a coffee-based beverage.
Yeah, I don't put anything in it. Because that's defeats the purpose.
Do you like coffee? I don't know. Do I?
I don't. I'm not. You know, I don't want the calories or the fat or whatever. Coffee. I just want the caffeine.
Right.
So that's. I don't put anything in it. So there you go. I don't drink too much.
Drink that.
When
it has to be hot.
We're going to talk some sports at some point.
Sure. At some point.
We have an hour. We have time.
I had an actual job. For a while, when I couldn't get the job at Channel 4 that I wanted, I had to get a job. So I got this job. It was actually at DST or NFDS at the time, where you answered phone calls for mutual fund companies. This is back before you could look your account up on the internet. You would call the number and you would answer the phone. You'd say, Guardian Mutual Funds, this is Todd. How may I help you? And you would look their account number up for them and see if they wanted to redeem some shares, if they just wanted a balance check. I mean, you would just do these things, right? And I would walk in to this call center thing in the morning. I think I was working like 8 to 4, 7:30 to whatever. But they had staggered times because they wanted people coming at different times. And I would go in there, and I'd never had a coffee in my life. And I would go in there, and these people who had been doing this job for a while were just like zombies walking in. And they would go into the coffee room, and they would give me my coffee. And then they would like be alive after they got their coffee. I was like, I don't ever want to be dependent on that. So I didn't really drink any coffee ever, really, until like, you know, a few years ago or whatever. Oh. We started having coffee with my buddies and stuff like that. And I would go in there with my, they gave us a little water juggy thing the first day, and I would fill it up with ice water, and that's what I would drink. I said, I don't need anything other than ice water.
And then you would just shoot adrenaline straight into your veins, and you were good.
That was fine.
I was
enthused by the work. I didn't need.
I bet you were.
No one has ever been enthused by work.
If I wasn't going to drink coffee when I did morning drive and had to be at work at 4, then I was never.
Then you weren't going to.
I was not going to drink coffee. Let's do one more offbeat thing before we talk about sports. You know, sometimes things work in, you know, offbeat type of order so that it creates something that you go, ah, that's too bad. Last night at the B&B Theaters in Shawnee, they showed Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
I knew they
High
were showing that, yeah.
Because it's the 40th anniversary. Well, unfortunately, we just watched it twice.
Yeah, because it's like on like the AMC or something.
It's on AMC.
Yeah.
In fact, I watched a little bit of it last night.
Yep, on again, I saw it too, right before 16 Candles.
And even...
Or no, Breakfast Club.
Even the AMC version was still funny.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
not quite as
no,
funny.
No, and not nearly as funny. I mean, for instance, when Mr. Hand goes to talk to Spicoli in his bedroom at his house,
yeah,
the Playmate, the Playboy photos are all blurred out.
Oh, they're blurring out? I hadn't noticed that.
They're blurred out in the background, yes. So my wife mentioned it on Thursday, and we're like, well, that kind of would have been fun, but we just saw it. So.
I'd seen, I don't know who it was, one of my Facebook friends, must be someone who's about our age or whatever. So they sent a picture. They were there, and they were the only people in the theater.
Really?
Last night, yeah. So I don't know if it took off.
I was going to say, because my wife said, do you think that movie resonates with people who are young?
Oh, she doesn't know what we're talking about.
She doesn't even know what Fast Times at Ridgemont.
Kids today probably think it's offensive in some way.
I'll add this. I maybe more what's going on with movie theaters in general, because for the anniversary of The Godfather, they did the same thing. And it was myself, a buddy of mine, and maybe three other people. And that was a weekend.
Yeah, well, here's the deal.
The night that I saw Godfather, there was probably 40 people.
Was there? Okay, so it was a bitter.
But they're just on everything now. It used to be they were just going on
TV
all the
time. But it is
cool
to watch a movie, something like that, even if you've seen 20 times, see it on the big screen.
Yeah.
That's an experience. Sit in a theater and have popcorn and a soda or whatever and watch an all-time great movie.
Especially certain films. I mean, there's some films that don't really. I mean, Fast Times at Ridgemont High really doesn't matter whether you watch it on the big screen.
Star Wars might be, we know, but yeah. Singing on the Rain, I saw.
I still think
big theater.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High would be funny to people of a different generation, just because there's some of the same things that they deal with: high school angst and things, working in a fast food place and it being frustrated.
Yeah,
with that.
I'm just saying, knowing the young people I know, they would be offended by some of the jokes in there. Because that's the world we live in now.
A little bit.
Yeah, probably. I'm not getting on a high horse
about
this right now.
Mike DeMone's character would be quite as well accepted.
No.
Some of the things
I don't
did.
Think he was accepted. That's the thing that we talk about with Blazing Saddles or whatever. I just think if people think that you couldn't show these movies or do these movies, the people who are doing offensive things are not seen in a heroic light.
Although he is forgiven at the end. I want to... Spoiler alert.
If you haven't seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Rat forgives him.
Well, he forgives everybody.
Yes, because he's nice.
He's a simp.
Yes.
No, I'm kidding. All right.
Let's
see, you
talk.
Knew that term. Anyway. See, there you go. You watch the movie. You watch the movie, you see that's that way it goes. So, all right, let's talk a little, not sports itself, but I want to play this soundbite from Clark Hunt, the chairman of the Chiefs, about Arrowhead. And he was available today and like the future of what Arrowhead Stadium could be, because there's all this stadium talk. The word is out that the Royals are exploring things downtown. And one of the things that we heard from Mark Donovan the other day when he met with the media up in camp to kick camp off was this World Cup thing, it's really not going to be it's a bother for the Chiefs because they're going to find some money. They're fundraising. I don't know how much money they'll put in to make this, or they'll find some money to do this. They need to spend maybe $50, $60, $70 million to take some seats out and put them back, and then take them out and then put them back again. They said they're going to do this over two years.
Because they wanted to have the possibility of playing a game the year before.
And that's a problem, okay. But it's not a problem of having perhaps a 20-game road trip would be. Because they're going to get – Mark Donovan said four games. Now, that's not going to be in 4 days, but it'll be fairly quick. But this is going to be – a road trip that the Royals will have to take that will be longer than what they do now. They used to do 13-game road trips. Mm-hmm. Now you don't do more than a three-city road trip. That's the rules.
And we plotted out the last time the World Cup was here in 94, the games that were at Soldier Field. This is an example. They played four games. Mm-hmm. It was hard to find a spot where they could have even played a series. I mean, maybe one series, but it would be very difficult because it might be like Wednesday,
places,
Thursday, Friday or something, and they're playing on Saturday.
All of those places were places where there's not a baseball stadium right next to it. I mean, that's the Royals' problem.
But if that was at Arrowhead, then if they're playing there, you're done for 20 days. You're done for three weeks.
Right, because they're not going to allow them just
you're,
to come in there and have a series.
You're the 92 Astros, who Danny probably would well know, were at a 26-game road trip because of the Republican National Convention that year.
Right, so... the Royals are going to have to deal with some of this stuff, and that's maybe, I mean, I had heard that they're trying to maybe fast-track this stadium thing and be out of there by then and not be an issue. Now, that seems every day that you don't have something done is a day that you're not building something. That would be very ambitious to be in another ballpark by the middle of the summer in 26.
Very.
Unless you say, we're paying for it. If you're paying for it, you could get there.
Yeah, because you could start now.
Yeah,
you could write a check and start.
You could start digging.
Start writing checks.
Yeah, you could start digging. Anyway, that's part of the situation with the Royals, and that's not particularly about this part of Arrowhead, because people are saying, if the Royals go, what do you want to go? What are you going to go? And then people were all spooked out when they saw this stuff about downtown, or about, you know, the Kansas gambling thing is creating this little fund to try to attract professional sports teams. Although it's a pittance compared to what it would cost to go put a football team there. But here's Clark Hunt talking about Arrowhead Stadium and maybe its future.
That process is ongoing. We're very hopeful that we'll be able to renovate Arrowhead when the time comes, but we're probably still, you know, a year plus away from being able to make that determination. What I've learned through the process is it's not a very simple answer when you're trying to make a decision about whether a building can go another 25 or 30 years starting in 8 years from now. Yeah, so, you know, we're being very methodical about it. We want to get to the right answer because it's very important.
I just wanted to make sure I understood that, but you're hopeful that you would be able to stay there and renovate the current structure of the building?
Yes, that would be our number one priority. We're going to evaluate all the options, obviously. We've got to figure out what's best for the franchise, what's best for the fan base. But it starts with evaluating Arrowhead, and that's where we are right now.
It sounds to me like they would rather stay there and not mess with it. But who knows?
I think that they would obviously rather stay there, and I think that is probably the best location for them. People are familiar with it. The dynamics of tailgating have been established for generations. But I think the real idea is, I don't know what the challenges were when they did the last renovation from a structural standpoint. It seems to me like the best solution probably, or the most seamless and maybe the most simple solution, is just build from grounds on the same place from ground zero, or really close.
Right. Like if Kauffman Stadium, right, if they left, then you would just
use the footprint there.
And you do it there and then go the other way. Now, I think just from the way those, you know, Arrowhead is more centrally located in that,
yes,
in that area, because there's nothing behind,
right, there's
Kauffman.
There's nothing to the other side of
there's
the
There's nothing
stadium,
to the other side. And they would like probably to encircle it with cars, who knows, whatever. They'd find their way. And there's a lot of land out there where they could consider doing something. I mean, you could build it right next to Arrowhead Stadium. Like, remember when you see the pictures of when they built the new place, Mercedes, in Atlanta? It was like 20 feet away from the Georgia Dome.
Same thing with the Giants.
Yeah,
with
it was right next to it. And so there's room there to do things.
Can you? How far away does it have to be for you to play games in the one and be building the other?
They just put big fences up, and yeah, you know, you don't go over here and you go play.
Yeah,
they played at Georgia Dome the entire time that they were getting that ready. So we'll see if that's the case. Now, maybe if some crazy sweetheart deal comes their way and they get out there in Kansas off 435 or K-10 or somewhere, I don't know where they would think about doing it, maybe they would go do that. But what I know about Clark Hunt, and we'll maybe later talk about the uniforms, and they're very traditional. They don't change things. I mean, when they renovated Arrowhead Stadium, they were very particular not to mess up the bowl of the stadium. They didn't really do anything structurally to the stadium part. They built a huge press box and suite thing around the outside, and they kind of did it there. They didn't really tear up what they had done and
they
do something different.
They sort of did what they did at Soldier Field, kind of.
Kind of an opposite thing. Soldier Field just put it inside an old place,
right,
and the Chiefs put new stuff outside,
right,
an old place. Kind of like an opposite thing. What Mark Donovan said, when they're going to do this World Cup stuff, that's going to be the structural issues, because now you are dealing with footings that got poured 1960 or 71, 70. Mm-hmm. You know, it took a couple years to build that stadium before they got it done. And if they're in there cutting, because you see pictures of the stadium getting built. I mean, first thing you do from ground up. Those are the same. That's the same concrete that was there. The same footings.
Yeah,
that
was
all that
was
a long time ago.
Back then.
Yeah, that was the thought I have. Is that if they didn't do anything with that, which I guess they didn't, then is there structural integrity?
Yeah.
To build to make major renovations on top of what potentially is not sound.
They're
structure.
So ridiculously traditional in some ways. It was ludicrous how long. They actually replaced every orange seat in there with an orange seat at one point. And they weren't supposed to have orange seats when they built it, but that's just what happened because the seat people didn't have enough red and gold seats, so They had orange seats, and they were when they replaced them, they could have put red seats in, and they said, "Well, no, they were orange before." Well, that's dumb. But they did it because that was when Lamar Hunt was still alive. So they went crazy, and they put red seats on this thing this last time out. So it was a wild thing. So they're a little less traditional about some things, but they're traditional enough to where they didn't want to mess with that bowl, the integrity of the bowl. I remember Lamar Hunt saying those things.
Those
and Clark
points,
Hunt saying
those four points.
Yep.
By the way, Arrowhead broke ground July 11th, 1968.
Yeah.
So
by
it
the
was
way,
four
the,
years and a
ago.
Month before they actually opened.
The structure of the seating there is bad. I mean, it goes up kind of in the corners.
Yeah, the corners is it looks interesting, but
not,
no one wants to sit.
Nobody
there.
Wants to sit up there.
There's worse seats. They here have these worse.
Be
seats.
Much better to have higher seats on the ends.
Exactly.
Give us a seat you
there's
don't
want.
There's
only like 10 rows or whatever on the ends. So there's not very much space.
No, there's not. But it, looks it is what it is. It's unique, and they like that part of it. So I don't know what they'll do.
I'm more intrigued about hearing Curtis talk about these potential uniforms.
Well, let's talk about it then. Get that uniform clip ready. That's number 7, Adam. We'll play this one. And Donovan talked about this too. The thing that Mark Donovan said was when he first came to town, like he'd been there about a year, and he says, you know, what about these uniforms? Because, you know, Philly, while he was there, changed. They went from that old school Philly green to the little darker green. They switched up the logo a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he said he was pretty much like shouted down.
It hadn't changed since.
But told, hey, dude, don't mess with these uniforms when he first got to town. And now he's like, maybe so. There could be some stuff. But here's Clark Hunt talking about where the Chiefs stand on alternative uniforms.
Part of our mission statement is to honor tradition. And part of that tradition is the Chiefs' colors, red, white, and the gold stripe. My dad was always very, very focused on making sure that our uniform stayed consistent, which if you go all the way back to the beginning, it's changed very little. I think, you know, a fan, no matter where they are, whether in the United States or now overseas, when they see the red and gold, they know exactly what team that is. And I think that's just very important for the brand.
Don't hold your breath.
I love the fact that they haven't changed uniforms. I think Danny and I differ on this probably to a large extent.
No, not necessarily. I'm a kind of a traditionalist, but what I see is that...
But that particular uniform, I love. And I hope they never change that uniform. But I don't think you have to do that. I think there's a separation between that and just having an alternate uniform. Having an all-white or having, you know, whatever, for one game or maybe two games.
Yeah.
But the Packers have
we got extra games.
Do you think
now?
The Packers uniform is less noticeable than
awful.
The Chiefs
the ones
all over the world?
That, yeah.
But they've done all kinds of things with their uniform over the years.
You but can you still
have
know
an alternate uniform and still have your base and never change.
So
that.
I actually agree with that. I think that it's fine. Everybody does it. It creates something else for people to enjoy, not argue about, whatever. I mean, right here, I'm looking at a black helmet, a white helmet, and a gold helmet. They all look are. The thing is, it's the Arrowhead with the KC inside it that's so iconic.
Yes.
That if you have that,
yeah.
Now you're not talking about changing, you know, like the Rams did, or changing the style of the horn, or what, you know, the Bengals did when they created the varicose pumpkin, which is what I always call it.
Right.
And they're gonna have a white one this year, and I actually thought it looked all right when I saw
it.
You know, so I think it would be fine to. But I think that the Chiefs in the main. Maybe in a year that they have, they should always wear the home uniform regular for 6 games. And if they have 9 home games, do it 3 times. And if they have 8, do it twice.
Yeah.
And I think people would enjoy that.
I mean, they wear the red pants, the red over red. They're not shy about trotting that out there. That's not, it's the same uniform and just road pants with the home jersey. But you've already decided that the standard home uniform is negotiable. Well, the next step is to, instead of making it all red, make it all white with a white helmet. I get no problem with that. I think people would kind of enjoy it. Now, it isn't like you're going to go out and rush out and buy, you know, sometimes when they introduce a new jersey or an alternate jersey, it's so fans will go to the pro shop and buy a new jersey.
They're not going
to
go buy
a helmet. No one's
going
to go buy a helmet. But,
no.
But people will still like it. They'll still... They'll,
well, someone might buy
someone
one
might
for
go
the man
out,
cave.
Yeah, buy,
but
buy
yeah.
A miniature helmet and say, yeah, that was cool. I mean... I don't think you mess with the brand by having an alternate uniform. It's an alternate uniform.
Because so many teams have changed their uniforms, period.
Yes.
I mean, the actual main uniform has undergone significant changes.
If the trade is, if the options are, Be the fan of a team who is never going to change their uniform, and because of that adherence to history, they're never going to have an alternate uniform. Or be the fan of a team who will change at the drop of a hat, or just does so not in a judicious fashion. I'll take the former. I'll gladly not have an alternate uniform.
I agree.
If it means
with that.
my team's uniforms won't look like crap someday.
I think if you're a university or a pro team and people really can't identify what you're base uniform is, that's a problem.
Which is half the colleges, unfortunately, right. Now, except for Alabama. You know, most of the SEC schools don't mess around, but Tennessee screws around with that anthracite color that just ruins. Orange doesn't sit with that well at all. Oregon, you don't really know what their uniforms are. KU's doing
Oklahoma
a little bit
State's
of that.
Kinda getting
Oklahoma
to that.
State does it, but...
Yeah, it works for recruiting on some of these kids.
Yeah,
they never wear the same uniform twice.
It does.
I don't know.
Apparently, they.
Missouri has 500 different combinations of helmets and jerseys.
The funny thing is, the one I like the least of all of Missouri's uniforms is the most traditional. I hate that old gold color because I think it just comes out looking like baby crap.
You try to make it do it on the pants
and whatever. I understand what the idea of old gold is, but it's like for teacups or something. You can't really
some teams that look
like shag
the way
carpet,
they do it
1972.
But you know the team that screws that up is Notre Dame. Tries they have that the sparkly helmet and then they match it with those flat, you know, looking
pants.
I'm like, do one or the other. You don't mix it. But anyway.
We'll see.
I don't think the shiny helmet.
Maybe the Chiefs someday will have an alternate uniform. It sounds like Mark Donovan's somewhat optimistic, but Clark Hunt didn't sound super optimistic.
I think most
there.
People do agree that they don't like the State of Texas helmet.
Oh,
yeah, the AFL one.
Texas one with the little star. Right.
I'm not a huge fan of it because they're not in Texas anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, I don't mind it. I don't hate it, but I didn't really like it. I get it's the AFL helmet, and that's fine. But I'd rather them come up with some cool alternative helmet than
that has the iconic arrowhead
on it.
Right. No question.
Or something like that. Maybe they could do the fountain one that the Royals have. I like the Royals uniforms.
Do they still do the gold numbers on Fridays? They need to yard that bad boy. That thing was good for 1 year.
And they did
I got it.
Funny.
It was after the World Series.
They were golden.
They're plain, just their standard. Home
whites are also so clean.
I see no reason to add gold to it.
I think the gold rung hollow because they just went back to losing a whole bunch of games.
Why are they wearing gold?
You're still wearing
your celebration.
And it almost reminded people of, boy, we're only 3 years removed from winning the crown. And we really did fall apart. We stink.
When they took the 85 world champions off the scoreboard.
Except
because
there for
after
a long
been for 20
time.
Years, like, maybe we should take that down.
Yeah,
it's just a reminder of how long
it's
been.
It's like when you drive into a small town in Kansas and Missouri, and they always have the when they won the
state championship,
and they'll be won, and you're like, hot damn, they haven't won the football championship since 2002. I mean, take the sign down.
Hey man, can't take it down.
You know, just throw
championships
a couple
last forever.
Don't remind people that you are no longer a power.
Or you could just
in cross country or whatever.
Throw a couple of fake titles on there if you want.
Yeah, just put up debate. Nobody would know.
But you don't want to be caught lying.
Foundation.
Isn't that the essence of debating?
Helms titles.
These days?
Chris is trying to say put a Helms title up.
Do championships that were awarded 40 years later by a guy who.
You got no argument
watch.
For me. You're looking at me. I'm going to argue.
I know we're kindred souls there.
I always want to point out North Carolina and Kentucky recognize theirs and claim their Helms title.
It's just as dumb.
Maybe go ahead and let the big boys decide this one.
It's just as dumb.
Yeah, it is just as dumb.
We'll let you know when you get a seat at the adult table, Curtis.
The most powerful person in the world occasionally says stupid things. The smartest person in the world occasionally is an idiot. So
I think especially now that you just won another one.
Yeah,
I mean,
just stop. Stop with that.
Well, you can't
stuff.
Take them down now. They're up there.
Well, you can take
them. A guy who worked at a bakery. Let's settle down, folks.
Is that Mr. Helms or the baker?
No, Helms was his buddy. Helms was the guy who started it, and the guy who picked him was like an employee or something along that line.
Well, he was an esteemed, he was a saber.
Four is enough.
He was a sabermetrician of the time.
Just take the four you've got. Missouri didn't even have a Helms trophy to tout.
Would you put it up though?
I think they would.
I'm really. Oh God, I hope. I'm so
no,
glad
I mean,
they don't.
If they had won one, and since Kansas did it, I would think that Missouri would have.
I think it's actually more acceptable to talk about a Helms title if you've won an actual natty than if you haven't won one. If Missouri had won a Helms and put it up there, that would be worse than Kansas
Might as well put up a natty light flag.
Right. Now, the Natty Light flag Missouri has is a picture of Larry Eustace. That's our Natty Light championship.
Come on. Man. Natty Light catching strays today. Danny Klinkscale is here. He's unleashed on the program on a Friday.
All right, the good sense. End of the hour, Andrew. I wouldn't think I'd struggle over an hour.
Not easy.
Didn't fall. I just tripped a little bit. A little bobble. Aaron Judge hit his third walk-off homer of the season last night. He's the first Yankee to do three in a season since Mickey Mantle in 1959.
I think only a couple guys have done it.
Who was the last Royal to hit two in a season? Todd and I knocked this around for a while in the top of the hour break. The list of Royals players who have done it is interesting.
Oh, probably a couple of Humpties, I would imagine. That's not.
It was back to 1995.
Oh, how about?
He's got a special year. Yes. Only 1 year, right?
I'm sorry, it goes back to 97. My bad. He was there in 95, but it goes back to 97.
Sounds like a Joe Randa type of thing.
Mm-mm. Switch hitter? Known by a nickname, did not go by his first name. Born first name.
Bip.
Mm-hmm. Not bad. More of a home run hitter.
Chili Davis.
Well, he was a home run hitter.
Chili Davis in 1997. Here, this
hit
is
30 for the Royals in a year.
These are the Royals who have had two walk-off homers in a season. George Brett, you expect. Yeah. Greg Pryor, you don't expect. Frank White, Bob Hamlin in his rookie of the year season in 94. In 95, they had two guys do it. Gary Gaetti, who hit 35 bombs that year. And John Nunnally.
Nuns.
Who homered in his first at-bat. And then Chili Davis in 97, and no one has done it since.
That's more than I would have expected.
The Royals have not had a
season,
walk-off.
I mean, you got to win some games to
part of the deal. You have to score. The Royals haven't scored in a week.
Per capita.
Yeah. The Royals have not had a walk-off home run since May of last year. Carlos Santana.
This is a Sunday afternoon, I think. If I recall.
Might have been.
Might have been.
Right.
I remember that.
That sounds right.
It's a day game, at least.
We're in the Blues.
Yeah.
By the way, the Mariners, the Astros just swept them, and they beat them again last night. But, I mean, in the first, 30 games that Santana played for them, they won, almost all of them.
Yeah, well, now they're coming back down to earth. Playing the real team like the Astros. How about the Royals last night, though? Brady Singer was fun to watch.
Yes, he was. And, that's the point of the game. Sure, it's disappointing, walk-off, whatever. I mean, 7 innings of one hit, 10 strikeout baseball, that's the point.
Especially there against that team.
Now, it's a little disappointing that the Royals, we're looking at the hitters too, but I don't care that much. We talked about this last week. These guys are getting their at-bats. They're new to the major leagues. This is not make or break to me. I'm not going to be disappointed if MJ Melendez, who's been hot and cold, but overall looks pretty good. But if Prado and these guys are only okay or team stop, that's all right. They're getting their at-bats.
And they're missing one guy who the largest portion of the future is staked on.
By the way, he's not in the lineup tonight either. Yeah. Bobby Witt Jr. been out since the 24th.
Last played on Sunday.
That's not good. By the way, you just never ever listen to the Royals talk about injuries.
I don't know why. Just put someone on the IL and bring someone else up. They're playing baseball games with less people than they need to.
Yeah.
Right. There needs to be better evaluation than that.
And if you haven't heard, they did make a move today. Salvador Perez has been reinstated, and Emmanuel Rivera has been sent back down.
So it's the pitchers because they've been here longer.
Yeah.
And this part of the season, this back half of the season is important that these pitchers do something. And hey, I'm not going to hitch my wagon on just two games, but, you know, Brady Singer, if he, I don't expect him to continue this, but now he's striking people out, he's doing what you expect to see. And this staff, you have to have a number one starter at some point, or you're going to have to go deal for it. And so they've had a pretty good run right now of these guys throwing effective starts. Yes. Keller was pretty good in his game the other night. Now these guys still walk too many guys. All of them do, mm-hmm. except for Singer the last couple times. But that's the encouraging part. That's what you want to see.
And as David Lesky noted last hour, it isn't just this start or his last start. It's that they came back-to-back. It's you have the 12-strikeout start, and so many times someone who has that seeming that breakout start falls back the next time, that he went into a much more difficult situation.
I liked the
basically
fight
basically just
against,
as good, if
I mean,
not
the best
better.
Team in baseball, right?
No, yeah. I fully expected him to get knocked around. I'll say it. I did.
You expect Bubic to get knocked around tonight?
I do.
Yeah, probably so. Salvi's DHing tonight, by the way. He's in the lineup, yeah. not catching. The leadoff catcher. Melendez is leading off and catching because it's 2022. Why not, man? Whatever.
Well, it's a good spot for him.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, he hasn't really hit for average so far, but he's got a good eye, and I'm not so sure I, you know, think that it's the greatest thing in the world to have Vinny Pasquantino hitting third. You know, guys, think about those things. Third's third, you know. Now third,
one,
you know,
one,
second
three,
is really second is really third now in baseball a lot of times.
Tell you what I liked last night out of him. He stepped up and squared around a bunt early and bunted it right past the pitcher when they had the big shift on. And people always say, want him to just bunt. Well, you know what? He can handle the bat well enough. I was like, cool, fine, do something.
Yeah.
I mean, it was good to see him do it. And he wasn't, like, scared about it either. And it wasn't like he just, you know, real quick late. I mean, he kind of squared around pretty early and bunted it right past where the pitcher can get it and was able to get on base. You have to be smart enough and be able to handle the bat well enough and have swallow your pride. How often do we see someone, I'm just going to hit it through the shift. I don't care. I'll hit it over the wall. You have to be smart enough to do something different sometimes.
And also, I think that he's probably seen that, you know, with shifts and the dynamics that he probably doesn't see as effectively in the minor leagues, he's hit the ball hard a lot and made outs.
Yeah.
So why not do this, even if he's going to hit, say a guy like him is going to hit 25 home runs in his rookie year. You know, he's not, but say he's played all year. That means you hit a home run about once every 10 days. You know, I mean, so what's better, a bunt hit or an out?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty easy. So, yes, I like seeing it too. I saw Astros, Jose Altuve the other night, ninth inning. They needed an extra run. Infield is way back. They got a kind of a shift on him. He just lays down a bunt, gets a hit, whatever. Yes, I think many people should do more of it. But if ever anybody has seen batting practice, we know how seriously they take those bunts they take at the end. They take three or four bunts at the end, and they might as well be holding a cup of coffee in one hand to bring it full circle.
Ever.
So
That was nice last night. And, you know, the Royals, they're playing the Yankees four times, and you don't figure they're going to –
Well, that might have been
more than
that might have been the
that
one.
Was the chance.
That might have been the one.
They've only won two series there since 1995.
It's not great.
They've been swept 11 times in that time frame.
That's
not surprising.
No, it's not that. Well, swept. That's a lot.
11 sweeps.
Well, a four-game sweep is a lot. But
yeah, most of those were three. But
yeah, it
took two out of three in 14 and in 11.
Do you figure they made the trade? Benintendi's gone. We talked with Lesky about the prospects, but the big picture, more trades coming. I mean, do you think Whit Merrifield is going to be gone?
I am not going to be surprised if the Royals don't make deals. If people expect other things to happen, I'm never going to be surprised if the Royals don't do something. They just have that's their history. This would be a great step forward.
Despite
they have made two deals. In both cases, I was a little bit surprised at the return. Pitchers they got from the Yankees, generally two out of three of them were pitching, you know, a little too old for where they were pitching. But I thought still it was pretty good return. And Santana, I was shocked. I actually got a guy who joined the major league team for him. So I hope they make more moves. I think they should make more moves, but I'm not going to be surprised. By the way, here's something about the vagaries of baseball. There were, I think it was Wednesday night. The team that was worst of the two teams in the game was 11-1 that night. The lesser team was really? 11-1.
And who lost?
Wow.
I can't remember who
probably the Royals.
Who
probably
lost.
The Royals.
It might have been the Royals. I don't know. But I mean, that just shows what baseball is like. I mean, these were, and we know that these teams now, there's quite a few of them who are bad. You know, 20, 30, 35 games under 500, and they went 11-1.
It's baseball, baby.
Yep.
It's baseball. All right, Danny Klinkscale's here. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about sporting. Ugly affair on Wednesday out in Sacramento, but they, you know, I don't know where they're going to go from here because it's not looking good for the regular season,
no.
And it's not that was bad because what they could do
they
was
could,
win the U.S. Open
yeah.
Cup.
Well, and we can talk about that because that was really their chance to sort of get to
something
you,
out
you
of the season.
You don't even call it it's soccer. You don't call it a consolation prize. It's another prize.
Right.
And they lost their opportunity to do that.
And to a team that they probably shouldn't have lost to. But it happens. It happens. Danny Klinkscale is here. He's Unleashed on a Friday on the program. Welcome back into the program. Todd Lebo in for Sarin Petro. Curtis Seabolt here for himself. Adam here for himself. Danny Klinkscale is here, as he is every Friday.
I'm here for the entire...
You're here for everybody.
Team. I'm not just here for myself.
I'm here for myself and for Easton Roofing.
By the way, Easton Roofing, have you seen the pictures of, you know, it rained in Las Vegas? It doesn't rain there. Okay, so the streets flood, and that's what happens. Water pouring through the roofs of casinos and stuff. We got to get Easton Roofing out there to the new Circa Casino downtown.
Sounds like a good gig. Good
oh,
job.
My God.
Well, they do great.
They're just pouring through the ceiling.
It's incredible.
I don't think they build...
It's like movie footage.
I guess they don't think it's going to rain or something.
Easton does commercial. They do residential. It is funny when you're in certain... So go to Easton Roofing. They're the best. And Joe and his fine crew, they've been up on my roof, Seren's roof, do fantastic work, aren't going to charge you or even tell you that you need a roof if you don't. So go to EastonRoofing.com.
Yeah, and send them to Vegas. I couldn't believe the water pouring through these. Now, it rained really, really hard. But they don't have maybe the same codes we need for certain things because it doesn't rain. But it rains sometimes.
Well, that's
out
like
there.
It was when they had this gigantic heat wave in England. A lot of these people don't have air conditioning too, because
right.
There's no point in it generally.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were in, I remember I did a UMKC game in Corpus Christi, and my wife and I went down there, and it was in the spring, and it was kind of, you know, it's almost in Mexico. I mean,
right.
So we actually had lunch on the lake out there or the bay on one day. But then this little cold snap came in. And it wasn't cold, but it was, you know, pretty cold, like 45, 50 during the day. And we went out to lunch on the way to the airport. No heat.
They didn't have heat.
The place didn't have heat.
Because they don't need it.
They never need it. Well, they needed it there. And
you don't need
my
it.
My wife got sick.
Until you need it.
And ended up staying in the hotel in the... Bush Airport in Houston because she couldn't make it the rest of
couldn't
the
couldn't make way. It home.
Couldn't make it the rest
wow.
of the way.
Couldn't make it home. All right, Danny, let's talk Sporting KC.
Very disappointing.
Wednesday night.
It was a fun game to watch. Made my ESPN Plus membership worthwhile. I watched the game.
Yeah, but it's disappointing because...
Sure.
And here's what's happened. Let's take it back to like last year in the postseason. Things fell right. They got home games. And then they were going to host MLS Cup.
Yep.
And in the last like 5 minutes of their last postseason game, after they were up 1-0 on a penalty kick, they gave up 2 goals and didn't even get to extra time. And it was just like as deflating I've seen walking out of Sporting Park. And they've had some playoff losses there.
Yes.
But that one was like, ugh.
Right, because it was a celebratory thing. We're going to have MLS Cup here. We're going to win the championship again.
Everything was falling their way. Since then, I mean, Polito, it was already hurt, but now it hurt even more.
Kinda
hurt now. I mean, so they're up against it, and they have found their way through, you know, luck of the draw and the way it's worked. They got to play Omaha at home.
Right.
And they were beat, It was Dallas, right? They came back and they scored a couple goals late, and then they went, and then now they got Sacramento. They had to go on the road. The draw wasn't great, but you're playing a team that plays in like a high school stadium, basically, is what it is. Nate was broadcasting the game like outdoors there. I mean, they didn't have like even a press box for him to do the game in. So this is, I'm not saying it's rinky-dink, but this is not MLS-level stuff. No. This isn't even MLS-level stuff in 1996. They weren't playing in stadiums like this. And you go out there, and you know, we were just looking through some of the opportunities they had early, and you just let them stay in there, and you let them stay in there,
They could have scored six goals on the night. And then, as you say, in a soccer game like this, the team is energized, the fans are there. They did pack the place to its full capacity of 11,000. And they're energized, and they, you know, Sporting took 31 shots, but the Sacramento blocked 14 of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're throwing themselves around. People are cramping. It was hot. I mean, they're just giving every undying effort, and in the end, they get this Cinderella victory and a penalty shootout, which was quite exciting. And one of their players did the most audacious dink of all time, maybe.
That would have been a very embarrassing miss.
It certainly would have.
Ephus.
It was amazing. It really was amazing. It was their opportunity to garner something out of a completely star-crossed season. And I don't know what you can expect going forward from Alan Pulido. I mean, all he's been is hurt since mm-hmm. they've gotten him. Now, they do seem to have some signings that are encouraging, but it certainly is. What it did was put kind of a sour exclamation point on what already was a disappointing season for them.
So here's the problem that I'm starting to see come to fruition for Sporting, where they just have to be like right on, and they're very good at finding players. But when they go big, they better be right. Because at this point now, the Pulido thing is not been worthwhile.
No.
Because he was very good when he plays, but if he's not playing, he's not helping you. And some of these teams who are coming into the league around here are just throwing crazy money around. And maybe in the end they won't do that. But like Austin's coming in here, and they're playing really well right now in their second year, and they've spent some bucks on some players. And they score a lot of goals. So that's a team who
if you're scoring a lot of goals, what that means is you've gotten things right.
Yeah. You're hitting on the players you're spending money on. You know, like Atlanta came right in the league and took the league by storm, and they're not very good right now. But, you know, I don't even know how you think about competing with what like LAFC is doing. I mean, like freaking Gareth Bale is on their team now. He is not some old, I can't play in England anymore guy, right? And he comes in there and just barely been on the team, walks in and scores a goal.
He just didn't play that much at Barcelona because he'd rather play golf, but he's great when he plays for his national team, and yes, he's using LAFC as sort of training for the World Cup because they're in the United States' group, as a matter of fact. But I don't even pretend to understand what the, you know, I know you can have a certain amount of DPs, but I don't know how with all these things where you're trading allocation money and such that
you can spend
a certain amount over. There must be ways. It must be kind of like the NBA.
It's harder for the team in Kansas City. Now, listen, if Cliff Illig and the Illig family just wants to go out and just burn money, they can go do that, okay? But they're not in the business of just going out and burning money, okay?
Right.
This isn't LIV, okay, where they're not making this money back on this golf thing, but they don't care.
Right.
Right. It's they're running a business here, and they're very smart businessmen, and they have squeezed about every bit of juice out of the orange on running this the right way and being smart about it and making really shrewd signings from places they find people around the world.
Right.
But they can't. They're not going to go out there and give a guy like $9 million.
Right. And when they did, it didn't work.
It hasn't worked.
And that's, you know, not their fault. It wasn't like he came here and he's played all the time and he struggled. He's been great when he's played.
Yeah.
But he just hardly played.
So it's disappointing. It's still a long way to go in the season.
But they have to win about every game.
Yeah, they're in last place and they're like 10 points out of the playoff thing. So you best get three a bunch of times, and maybe you can find their way. And they've played 23 games.
They've played more than most of the teams they're trying to catch.
So but they got to go through it. It's going to be really hard. But, I mean, this is not a group that ends up being in last place, right? So I expect they'll find their way out of there, but they've got to – you're not doing it by not scoring.
That's the biggest disappointment, and it people think of it as that it is the one that's why. I mean, strikers are like quarterbacks in the NFL. They get paid. You've got to have them. I mean, you can say the same thing that you say in football. This in this type of football, it is the ultimate team sport. Except you need people to put the ball in the goal.
And Johnny Russell's done a great job of scoring while he's been here. And Daniel Shalloway
has
had...
he's not getting any younger.
He is not, like, last year he was putting it in, and this year he's not, you know? I mean, it's kind of fickle.
He hit the crossbar in this game. Absolutely. So, well, I guess, you know, the timing is right because now the Premier League's going to start, so I can start getting my
heartbroken
fix from there. Well, my Arsenal squad looks like they're up and coming, so
they in Europe.
We know who
Europa this year.
They
could even make that.
No,
they could just.
Oh, they made
this.
That. They didn't make champions.
Well, no, they're not in Champions League. No. We know that. It's been a while for that.
Yes, they're in Europa League.
Yeah. So. Well, there's something for you.
And then there's a third competition now.
There's honestly, here's the deal. There's too much now. Like they're playing these things. These teams are. I told you I was in Vegas and Chelsea was out there and they were playing Club America out of Mexico City.
These guys hardly get any time off.
And the whole crew wasn't there. But I think eventually, here's the problem though. These players. You know, they play in so many different things for so many different deals. It's going to be hard for them to, like, unionize or something and say, we're not doing this, you know, because they are playing for all these different little federations and these things. But the teams have got to be smart enough to know that you can't just go just bring the kids to America for something that doesn't matter.
Well, it is their training.
Sort of.
So... and it makes them money, and they sell tickets. I mean, people show up for these games. So
Vegas has had like three or four games this summer. I turn on, I go, what's going on here? Oh, that's the Raider Stadium. Oh, that's what's this? I don't even know what it is. I can understand, here's your regular season, here's Champions League. Or I can understand U.S. Open Cup. But all the rest of this stuff is almost too much.
And then you got to play for your national team if you're good.
Right.
And so that's that many more games. These guys play a lot of games. They end up playing sometimes 70, 80 games, and they get precious little time off. I mean, when did the Premier League season end? Early in June?
Yeah, it's May, into May. It's Labor Day or Memorial Day weekend is when the final
Friday.
Is. Yeah. A lot of them don't have to play that deep into it.
Right. Well, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So you're Chelsea, right?
Chelsea, baby.
Oh, you got the shirt
on. I got my shirt on today.
Flying the flag today.
They'll be good. They'll be good.
They'll be fine. Better than Arsenal. I mean.
And I, of course, am a.
Maybe time for a little wager. I think we might get you this year.
Maybe.
And I, of course, am a huge Liverpool fan. I
ever since forever.
Every game. I watch every match front to back.
Well, that's
never
fun,
missed a minute.
You picked a fun squad.
There's never been a better time to jump on board.
If you're going to be a front runner, why not pick a good squad? They're fun to watch.
Them because of the Beatles.
Yeah.
Not exactly a.
That's
well thought out.
Hey, I picked Arsenal in part because of Ian Poulter. So
that still makes more sense than
now he's defected to live, and I don't like him anymore.
Yeah, so. He's gone. Danny Klingscale is going to be gone too. He's not defecting. He'll be back next week.
No,
maybe be. All right, Aaron Judge with 39 home runs. How many players have had more in their team's first 100 games? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.